Hello and welcome to a bumper episode of Inside the Pod, the PGR Row podcast. I'm Matt Webster and today we are up at the PGR Row's trial sites up in Stubberton, Lincolnshire for their annual Pulse Open Day. I'm here with my colleague Emily Scaife and we've been speaking to PGR Row's experts about everything that has been happening at today's Open Day. Firstly, we spoke to Roger Vickers, CEO of PGR Row, about what to expect from today's Open Day and why it's important to hold it.
Hi Roger, can you tell us a bit about why PGRO holds open days such as this one?
Well, these kind of open days are really important to PGRO. We're trying to constantly get across our message. You know, we're a charity. We're doing research on behalf of growers, for growers and the rest of the industry. And we need to make ourselves available to our funders, essentially. And if we don't do that, then people should be questioning how they get in touch with us or why are we not visible, etc. So this is just one of many events that we'll attend throughout the year. And it's an opportunity to show it as it is, really. And that's what you see here today, or the good, the bad, and the indifferent, I suppose. We don't hide anything, we show it as it is.
Who typically attends?
The attendees will be a range of people, I guess, right through the industry, from fellow researchers, academics, but primarily farmers and people in the supply chain. And if I'm honest about it, those are the people that we really want to get to. It's nice to see fellow researchers and partners in projects, etc. But the messages are ones that we want to get out to the growers for better crop improvement.
Have you had positive feedback from attendees here today?
I've had some really positive feedback from people who've received guidance from us throughout the year, and actually the reason they've turned up today is because they've interacted with us at other events or on the telephone or through our emails. And it's really nice to meet people who you've perhaps not met before, and they've all come back with some real positive ideas and they've taken on board advice or guidance and they want to come and see more, which is great.
Looking around at the trials here, is there anything you're particularly interested in or excited about?
Of course, I'm interested in all of it. Otherwise, it would be no point in us doing it, would there? But yeah, there's some really good stuff on the projects. And whilst the variety work, the variety work is the bedrock of what PGRO does. You know, all the foundations of agronomy start with the variety. So it's essential and will always be so. But some of the project work around crop nutrition and also the, you know, trying to get a handle through the NCS project on climate change is really, I suppose, of the moment and really interesting.
Obviously, it's been a pretty tough year in terms of weather. How are Pulse crops looking so far?
This year's crops, I think, are as variable as any other year. And when I mean variable, I mean different soil types perform differently, different geographical locations perform differently, different farmers have different techniques and get different results. So there's always that variation farm to farm, site to site. This year on this site we've had extraordinary conditions, been exceptionally dry with virtually no rain between the end of February and the last week in May. Any rain was absolutely negligible. Bone dry, cracks as deep as half my arm, literally, and bright sunshine. So it's been tremendous growing conditions on the one hand, but restricted by the dry. And you can see on this site, we've had failed trials this year on a significant scale. Unfortunately, we have completely lost the descriptive list for the spring beans and the spring peas on this site. That's why we do multiple sites across the country. And this is the only site that we will lose this year. And it's the only time while we've been on this estate that we have lost it in 8 or 9 years, which is fantastic. So, yeah, variable crops, I think, variable outturns, both in trials and commercially.
Are you optimistic about harvest this year or you're a bit nervous?
A little bit nervous. I think, extraordinary weather conditions. We don't really know what to expect. Some of them look fantastic. I think anything that was drilled really early, or shall I just say early, before mid-March has done really well. And anything that was drilled into April this year will probably be less than happy. And I think a lot of growers perhaps who got away with late drilling last year and ended up with a better than anticipated crop may have hoped to do the same this year. Unfortunately, I think they're likely to be disappointed.
We then spoke to Dr. Becky Howard, who went into a bit more detail about what to expect from the trials on this year's site, how these trials performed, and the PGRO's approach to research and development with these trials.
Morning, Becky. Can you tell us about this site and where we're stood right now?
We're at our Pulse trial ground at Stubton in Lincolnshire. So it's on the Dyson Farming Estate. This is where all of our Pulse trials are based. So we've got combining peas, field beans, both winter and spring, and we've also got some novel crops, so we've got lentils and chickpeas here as well. We've got quite a lot of different trials here, so we've got projects mainly, I suppose, this year, particularly our NCS experimental platform trial. So with that, we're looking at the long-term impacts of growing pulses in rotations, particularly with regard to nitrogen availability to following crops for a number of years, and also in terms of how having pulses in rotations impacts on climate for the better. We've also got this trial that you can see behind me, which is a new Innovate UK project as well, funded by DEFRA, and that's looking at nutrition in field beans. So it's quite a big trial, and this isn't the only site actually. This is also based at three other sites in Cambridgeshire, Lincolnshire and Yorkshire, and we're in the first year of that project. Other things that we've got here, I mean, often we have quite a lot of our chemical efficacy slot trials here, and we've got some, but we've had to move quite a few off this year because of poor establishment on this light sandy soil that we have here. So in 2025, we've had some issues really with moisture availability here, and so we take preemptive action in those situations and just move trials off-site. And right at the top, you can see this is quite a large trial ground. We've got the varieties at the top there, and over here we've got our novel crops, so we've got things like lentils and chickpeas.
Can you tell us a little bit about PGRO's approach to R&D and where the trials fit into that?
So we have an R&D strategy, which is as we've had for many years, and it's developed in conjunction with our industry panels. So we have two industry panels, one for the vegetable legumes, so that's vining peas and green beans and broad beans, and a panel for the pulses, so that's the combinable crops. With the industry members that are on those panels, we then put together a priority list really within a structure, within a strategy structure. So our structure is really very much based on an IPM pyramid, I suppose. So we look at everything from cultural techniques for managing pests and diseases through to soil health, biologicals and biostimulant products, right up to obviously what's at the top of an IPM pyramid, which is then the chemical evaluation. And of course, the varieties fall into that sort of cultural and genetic management of pests and diseases, as well as crop improvement. So it is a joint industry strategy, really, that leads to how we manage to prioritise our R&D work. So nutrition is one of those priorities, varietal evaluation is a priority, pest and disease management, of course, is always a priority. But that includes, you know, work that we might do looking at the use of trap crops, for instance, or field margins to manage beneficial insects. So multiple different streams of activity, not all based here. You know, quite often we're doing on-farm trials with growers, so large-scale trials. They're often more effective for some types of research, like pest, particularly mobile pest research. So it's very much an industry strategy as opposed to just our organisation.
You touched on it briefly before. We're currently experiencing very dry conditions. How are the crops here coping with this year's weather?
Well, I mentioned that we've had to move some things. So germination capacity was germination and establishment was affected quite badly for some of the crops, particularly those that were later drilled and there was less moisture available. This is quite a dry site. We've had no rainfall really for quite a number of weeks until this last weekend. Actually, some of the crops are looking better than you might normally expect, given how much water we've not had here. and everything else we've had to move. So I think it remains to be seen what yields will be like. It's possible they might be a bit lower than we might normally expect. But it does really, you know, it shows very clearly what the impact of climate warming can be and on some of the crops that we work with, and particularly field beans, which are very much a moisture-loving crop. So it's you know, I mean, it's interesting to work with, and it helps us to sort of better understand how the crops perform under these conditions.
Can you tell us a bit about what you're most excited about on site here?
The nutrition work in the field beans has been a massive gap, really, I suppose, for a few years. And there has been nutrition work done over the years in peas, but not so much in field beans. So I think that's really important, and we're really excited to be doing this work with in conjunction with MPZ and Lincoln University and Yara. So very excited about that. And one of my colleagues, I think, will be talking to you about our novel crops here, so the chickpeas and lentils. We're excited to see how well they're doing this year, actually, in the conditions that we're having, because that may give us a sign of, you know, what's in the future for us. Lots of interesting things to see.
What have visitors been asking you about so far? What are they most interested in?
Well, there's definitely a lot of interest in the nutrition work, and there's always interest in the variety evaluation. So we always have quite a lot of visitors coming to look at our varieties. And then, of course, some of the herbicide works here as well. And there's always quite a lot of interest in herbicide work.
Next up, we spoke to Dr. Chris Judge, who talked us through the PGO Rhodes variety trials for the descriptive list, as well as their various intercropping trials.
Hi, Chris. Can you give us an update on the descriptive list and the national list? How are the varieties tested each year, and how are the trials looking at the moment?
So this is one of the things that I do for PGRO. I run the variety trials for the descriptive list, and as part of that, then we also host varieties for the national list. So here behind me, we've got the winter bean trial, which is a DL and an NL trial combined, so both things randomised together, and that's often done for when for the bean trials, where the variety numbers are smaller, the peas are kept separate. So these are tested throughout the country, again, with us being responsible for the descriptive sites, some contracted out to others when they're further away from our base. But the goal is to be testing all of the new candidate lines against the existing ones on the list on a wide range of different soil types, so that then all the data can be put together for the season, and then that compared with the previous 4 years, to have a 5-year data set that goes into the ratings that people will see listed for varieties. This year in particular has been a tricky season. It's been very much a year of droughts, particularly in April and May, when the crops were first getting started. And that has meant that a lot of the spring crops have suffered. Obviously, I've got the winter beans behind me, but the spring beans and the spring peas have often really struggled to get going in the early lack of moisture. At this site today, we're not showing our spring croppings because they have suffered too much. But I am also sort of the trial inspector, and I go around looking at the other trials in the country, and some areas have had double or triple the amount of water we had in April and have done better. But even those ones are tending to be on the shorter, lower yielding side and looking more stressed, because it's been a difficult year for everywhere in the country, even if most places haven't been quite as dry as where we are today.
Are there many new varieties being tested for the descriptive list this year? What does it take for them to be included?
The winter beans, we've got two new candidates, and for the spring, also two new candidates. For the peas, we've got nine. And again, for inclusion, it ends up being a discussion with me and the breeders at the end of the year. So when all the data is in, I will then have a meeting with each of the individual breeders, both discussing, are there new candidates up to standard, but also, are there any of their existing material that they're not planning to support anymore? It's less of a case of things being kicked off, but if they've got, you know, five varieties that they're growing and four of them are much better than the other one, they're not going to want to divert resources into multiplying and maintaining that if they feel like the other ones are better. So the list stays kind of active and moving on that front as one, new things are added, but other things do get effectively dropped off just by if they've got something that's doing 90% of controls and something else that's doing 110% of controls, they're eventually going to want to stop multiplying the lower yielding one because they won't be selling as much, but they're also new ones need to grow in their market share and market reputation, so there'll be crossovers. For a candidate to get in, it's kind of got to be comparable to what's already on there and have no major problem. So, you know, if it's, you know, if the new candidate looks like it is going to be in the top percent of the yield and appear near the top of the list, that would obviously be a reason to go in. If it is more sort of average yielding, we'd then be looking at, does it have other traits of interest, like a larger seed size than anything else currently on there, a better disease resistance profile. And on the same thing, the opposite can be true for disease resistance profile. If, you know, we have disease ratings on a 1 of 9, if something new was bred with a disease rating of a 1 or a 2, even if it was well yielding, we would have to have a very serious chat about whether or not it could be added onto the list.
Is there anything particular that's caught your eye in the trials this year? Anything that you're particularly optimistic or excited about?
I'd say in general, I'm just optimistic about the industry in general. I'd say it is, with both bean sets, again, we're just very much slowly, continually testing new stuff, and it feels healthy, the number of companies sort of breeding for each thing. Because also, by looking at the VL trials, which is effectively the step before things become a candidate, they've got even more varieties in them, and you see that narrowing down period, and you can really see that there is a real healthy amount of breeders interested. It's not just there's two people who breed for winter beans and one for spring beans, and if they have a bad year, no, there is real there seems to be a healthy competition at the moment, and I think that has arguably increased a bit, and I think that's really healthy. On the pea front in particular, I would say the last couple of years, and it's still the case this year, there has been a real increased focus on breeding new marifats. For a while, there was quite a lot of market capture just by the one or two more well-known marifat varieties. And pretty much every year for the last couple of years, somebody's been putting a new marifat forward, and it should eventually lead to one of those or two of those settling out as being really good new options. Again, I would show you some, but the pea trial here has really suffered in the drought.
How has the drought we've been experiencing affected the PGRO variety trials so far this year?
For the PGRO descriptive list, we have a range of trials across the country. This year, in the heavy drought conditions, most of them are looking shorter and lower yielding and more stressed. But one of the advantages of having trials in many locations across the country means that if one or two sites do particularly badly or even fail, there's many other options that can still be included into the list. At this site that I am in Lincolnshire, two of the trials do seem like they're going to be a failure. However, we've got other trials in Cambridgeshire, and I've visited ones in Hampshire and Herefordshire and Kent, and several of those are still looking like they're going to be perfectly good trials. So that's one of the things that if we have 6 or 8 locations, depending on the crop, or even 10, if you have one or two that aren't acceptable, you can just easily drop them and still have a robust data set without feeling pressure to include things that aren't up to standard.
Okay, so we've moved along the site a little bit and we're now by the intercropping trials. Can you tell us a little bit about the mixtures you're currently trialling?
So we've got two intercropping trials here today. This one behind me is a winter intercropping trial, and down the other end of the field we've got a spring intercropping trial. Here we're focusing on, we've got winter beans with winter peas, and then also combinations of winter beans with triticale and winter wheat. And we've also tried a spring pea sown in the winter to see how that compares to the winter pea, because winter peas aren't always the easiest to get hold of. Again, a lot of focus with Pulse winter intercropping is very much on things as a winter wheat pair. Whereas people looking at, can I put a Pulse with my winter wheat and what effect does that give? I've done a couple of trials more focusing on getting the right population of that in previous years. But this year I wanted to move away from just looking at populations of that combination and look at some of the other conversations, like I say, with winter pea and with winter triticale. I think for the winter intercropping, I think there's a lot of potential in the non-winter wheat combinations, because I think whilst winter wheat combinations are interesting, I think there is often an issue with the winter wheat having a nitrogen demand before the nodules are fully operational in the beans. I've in previous years sometimes seen signs of early nitrogen stress in unfertilised intercrop mixes before the nodules get going and then start supplying it. That's one of the reasons we're trying this winter triticale, which was supposed to be by reputation from the breeder who recommended it, was supposed to be quite hardy and not need so much early N. And the winter wheat we're using here is also one that we were told was, compared to some of the more commercial lines, was told to be a little less N hungry. And we were trying to look at those cereals with that reputation to see if they end up performing better and more like the fertilised trials that you would be used to. We're also with this starting to look at its quality for forage for the first time. The plots at the back half of this had some sort of bags of samples taken and frozen, and a forage company is going to be investigating those to see which combinations they think are worth further investigation. For spring intercrops, again, we've got a trial here for that as well. And again, we're moving more away from identifying ideal populations to more looking at different types, because we're fairly happy from previous work about what populations are performing the best, and when we've recommended them to farmers, they've got on quite well with them. So we're looking today at using some maple peas and forage peas within the spring intercrop mixes as well, whereas before we'd been mainly just using white and green peas. And we're also trying to look at the difference between standard beans and LVC beans in the mix. Again, trying to think about, are those things having an input? Does changing your components affect its quality for things like forage or silage, which are alternative intercrop usage?
How are the trials looking so far this year? Any pleasant surprises?
Yeah, I think the pleasant surprise is how well the winter peas have done. Winter peas are often quite bird vulnerable, and we're next to a wood here, so it's always a bit of a concern that winter peas aren't going to perform well, and then particularly when they're in the mixtures and they're harder to net and protect. But the hot, dry season has been really good for winter peas. You know, winter peas are more popular in places like France where they're used to being hot and dry, and they're often more bred for that environment and that quick, short season. So the winter peas have grown really well and sort of recovered well from any bird damage because the conditions have been really good for them. On the spring trials, often one of the things we're looking at in intercrops is for differences in disease levels, where you might expect to get slightly less disease in the mixture compared to the sole crop. Because it's been so hot and dry, we haven't really seen much disease this year. Though what we have seen is, I think, a bit of difference in weed pressure, where some of the crops with oats in look like they're getting less weeds than the neighbouring ones. And also with pest damage, we've had a little bit of hair damage at the edge of that trial. And again, they were targeting the sole crops over than the mixtures, because if they're, you know, particularly in a mood to be eating a mouthful of pea into their little hair stomach, if there's a cereal in the way that is tougher or harder to eat, they were preferentially going for the sole crops, which again, it's not necessarily going to be a reason to grow them, but if you've got a big field that's mixed and your neighbouring farmer is all growing sole stuff, the hares may move from the hedgerow towards their field, not yours. Again, that's not necessarily the most serious point, but I think it's an interesting observation that we hadn't seen in previous years, that we were having that selective herbivory.
Are there any mixtures that farmers are particularly interested in?
I often get phone calls and things on the winter intercrops about what is the minimum amount of beans I can put in a winter wheat crop and it be useful. And again, as I said before, I think that's not necessarily the best way to be going about things. What is the minimum amount of beans? Because I think often if you're damaged looking for a real minimum, you're not getting the full benefit of an intercrop, which is getting that nitrogen fixation within season. And it is with having the two crops in there changing the environment for disease and changing the environment for weed pressure. If you're just doing a really small amount, you almost, it's almost more just like you've got a contaminant. I think the way to go for it is more treating it as a bean crop with, or a pea crop, where your secondary thing is being done for reasons of lowering inputs and gaining efficiency and things, rather than looking what is having a, rather than having a main crop and a minimum. I think it really works best if you're really trying to use both of them to their maximum ability. So often that is what's asked about, and then I often try and point people towards, if you're interested in doing this, I think you're often better doing it as a wheat break and committing to both crops in it rather than looking at a minimum. On the spring front, again, it is, I think intercropping is more suitable for spring than winter, but we're testing it in the winter because people are interested. On the spring front, I think across the country you are increasingly seeing beans and oats, or boats as people call it, becoming more and more popular, more and more farmers talk about it. At cereals, I'd have the bean oats and the pea oats and the pea bean in a line, and people would walk past, go, I've tried that, and they'll be pointing at the bean oats. Or a guy near me does that. And, you know, compared to several years ago, the amount of those comments are increasing. And again, so that is, I think, the one that is being more widely adopted. As far as what I think is the most interesting, and the thing that I often had the most interesting chats with people about at other events like this, like cereals, is the pea bean spring mix. Because by having both pulses there, one, it means that there's much more legal products you can use. And two, it means you're very much hitting the same slot in your rotation, and you're using the beans to hold up the peas compared to growing a sole pea crop. And compared to growing a sole bean crop, you're gaining those hopefully disease reductions, hopefully weed reductions, hopefully input reductions. And if you're growing it for a use where you're not separating them, where you're just growing it as a protein bulk effectively, whether that is for harvesting fresh or harvesting dried, if you're just trying to create a bulk of protein, the fact that you're putting two protein sources together rather than one and a cereal, and so the cereal, I think some of my more interesting chats with people, and some of the more interesting when farmers have tried that on a bigger scale, I think that's been some of the most interesting stuff on intercrops.
Can you tell us a bit about the commercial variety screening work you carry out for agrochemical companies and what you're working on at the moment?
So again, our remit as PGRO is to be serving the farmer and serving the industry, and, you know, disseminating free and biased useful advice. And we kind of do that via our sort of a charity arm. But we do commercial work for companies, and then just feed all of that profit into supporting, keeping everything else subsidised and free and use for people. So as part of that, the other team here, that you could probably speak to Alec later today, do chemical testing for people, and then they'll charge them for it, feed the profits into the end of the company, and write reports for those people. I, on the other hand, do commercial variety work. So lots of the big breeding companies that have breeding programs in Europe and elsewhere, they want to see trials done in different UK locations. They'll often have a UK agent who does a trial for them in one part of the country, and then they'll often also then want us to do a trial or two just to get things in a second location, a backup and a different soil type, and effectively act as a pre-screening before things will be going on the list later on. So again, you'll often have a pipeline of a big private company put 50 lines in a big private screening trial, and then they'll decide their favourites, and then they may go into VL year one with 5 lines, then VL year 2 with 4 lines, and then pick one of those to be a candidate for the descriptive list in the future. So by supporting those private trials, it keeps that pipeline going by letting them, you know, encouraging people who, you know, say they've got breeding programs based in Germany or Denmark or America or wherever, to test things in UK climates and be have them pre-screened here rather than just elsewhere. And it really, it helps support that pipeline of things coming through to farmers, whilst also generating profit that can be fed into the rest of the business to subsidise everything else.
Next up, we spoke to Shona Duffy, who talked us through the Answers project, which is looking to alleviate nutritional stress for wider environmental rewards in sustainable UK protein crop production.
For anybody unaware of the Answers Project, can you please tell us a little bit more about it?
So the Answers Project is funded by Innovate UK and is a huge multi-year, multi-site, multi-variety project looking at lots and lots of different micronutrients and seed treatments and those kind of things. We are just one of three main partners in the project, and we're coming to the end of our first year of trials.
Can you tell us a bit more about the trials work you're carrying out for the project?
So we're looking in great detail at each variety and all the sprays that we put on, the seed treatments. We've taken lots of foliar samples throughout the growing season. We've been targeting specific growth stages to put different sprays on, seed treatments, that kind of thing. So it goes into a lot of detail. Basically, anything that you can think of that we could look at for these beans in this trial, we're looking at them.
Obviously, it may be a little early to say, as I understand you're only in the first year of the project, but have you observed anything in particular so far? Anything interesting?
I think it would be too early to say that we've got any kind of thing, but there are some definitely some differences between the sites. We've got a site in Yorkshire, we've got a site here and a site in Cambridgeshire, and they're all showing slightly different things. So that's why we look at it over multi-years and multi-sites.
What kind of information are you hoping to be able to provide farmers with by the end of the project that they'll be able to use on the ground?
Well, the project's called Answers, so we're hoping that we can get the answers that growers need to grow their beans successfully year on year, just looking at and targeting things in a bit more detail.
What's the next stage of the project?
The next stage will be to look at the trial results we've had from this year, kind of narrow it down a little bit, be a bit more focused in terms of what we're doing, and then proceed and try and find out more answers.
We then spoke to Erin Matlock, looking at PGRO's lupin trials, as well as speaking about the pea and bean yen and its importance, and a new project for the PGRO called Reflex.
Can you tell us a bit about the lupin trials you're conducting here and the results you've seen so far?
So this year is really looking at different lupin varieties. We pulled in 16 different varieties from around the globe, so including Australia, France, Germany, as well as some local UK, just to do a general screening to see what varieties can adapt to our UK climate. We do know there is some soil pH issues. They like very low pH, like 6.5 to 7.2. So our site here on Stupton has failed, with the exception of two varieties that are looking stellar. So we're learning from that. But other site up near Gainsborough, all varieties are looking fantastic, and they are with a current lupin grower.
What kind of yields can growers expect?
So there's growers that have been growing them for years. They can get 3.5 to 4 ton, but I'd say more realistically 1.5 to 2. So not your high yielding, and you got to have the market for it.
What are their ideal growing conditions?
Hot, but also with some moisture. So a little bit more on the drought side of things, hence growing well in Australia, where it's a little bit drier than here. So that is going to be a learning curve with our potential wetter climate.
Are there any products that growers are permitted to use on lupins?
You've got to make sure you have a clean seed bed. There is only essentially pendimethalin and clomazone as a pre-em. Not a whole lot for post-emergence on the broadleaf side. So you have to have a clean field to start with. And as mentioned, make sure your soil pH is low, because they cannot stand anything really beyond the 7.2. So if you get around those two objections, then yeah, you can start to look at growing lupins.
What are the limitations of growing lupins?
The limitations is really down to soil pH, down to lack of available products, and then also having the market. So most growers today, they have a livestock market that they're selling into, so there is an end user, but it's a little bit tougher to market today.
And more optimistically, what are the opportunities?
There is a potentially decent opportunity if we have the proper market, proper growing conditions, and growers are willing to take risk. It is noted that it is a higher protein digestibility for our livestock rations, but we're also learning through our NCS project that beans roasted at the right temperature is pretty much as good as well. So if you are growing lupins, you're probably not growing peas and beans. It's going to be interchanged in your rotation.
Changing the subject slightly and thinking about the PM bean yen, I understand you're looking for more farmers to get involved. Is that right?
Yeah, so PM bean yen has been around for a few years. It's in conjunction with PGRO and ADAS. So this is really the opportunity for farmers to benchmark their own fields, their own yields, and then through the report to see what you are doing is enhancing your yield, or maybe what you're missing that other growers are using just to get that little bit more yield stability. So with all the background data, we're finding what is giving us yield stability. So the more people are involved, the better the picture is. It's not always about getting the highest yield, it's about getting the stability in our yields throughout the years.
It's very new, but I understand Reflect is a new project that's just been launched. Is there anything that you can tell us about this yet?
So Reflect is only a couple months into the project with no real true end date. So what we're doing is grabbing all of our historic data that we've gathered for years and years, sitting in archives, combing through that. What are we missing? Now that we have more access to weather data, current and previous, combine that together. And with the purchase of a couple of our drones, we're getting some NDVI imaging on the ground without having to worry about satellite images. So try and bring this all together to see what are we potentially missing that we're not seeing in yield, we're not seeing with our eyes, but maybe there's something there that we can bring forward.
How can the PGRO app help diagnose an agronomy issue?
So the PGRO app has moved into an agronomy tool. It was launched in November. So here we have combining peas, vining peas, field beans, as well as lentils, lupins, chickpeas, all the diseases, all the pests, the majority of the nutrient deficiencies in pictures, and then some text below it just to talk about why it's happening, what to look for. So you can diagnose in the field. If there is something there that is not in the app, you can create a report, send a picture, it gets directly to us and sends a report to yourself. We'll try and give you a diagnostic that way and potentially then send the sample into the plant clinic.
We then spoke to Alec Legetza, who leads PGRO's efficacy trials, who also talked us through the various NCS project trials that were on show today.
Can you tell us a bit about the efficacy trials? Why are they being carried out? How are they being conducted? What are you hoping to find out?
So generally, we carried out efficacy trials for clients which are interesting about efficacy of the product. And there is two different ways how we can do it. We can or test existing products with different combination. Like for example, here you can see that we have known product in different rates and we look for optimal combination of cost and efficacy. Or sometimes clients have a new product which they would like to introduce to the market and they would like to know how they perform on BNP, and because we are specialist in pulses across UK, so usually people come to us if they want to have a reliable set of data. And also we as PGRO, we have a mission to provide, these are the slot trials, so part of the data which are here are publicly available, and this is a very good information for growers what is going on the market, which product are coming in and how they perform. And it's also good information for us because we can, if growers come to us with some problem, we can say, okay, based on our experience, we can, and results, we can definitely say that it would better to choose, let's say, this product than that product, or if you have the issue, this approach will be better than the other one. So we kind of do like three different things. One is for growers, which is pay from levy. The other part is for a new product. And the other one is sometimes people just simply looking for different combination, just want to know how their product works against a well-known standard. Usually it's depending on the client, because if we're talking about the typical efficacy trial, the contract trial, so the client come to us and they give us a requirement, we decide what protocol we want, they want to do the trial occur, and after that we just simply run the trial, and if client want to next year is happy from the result or unhappy or just is interesting, we can do the follow-up. We have in the last 3 years we had quite success. We had the situation that the same clients run with us quite regularly, trial year by year, or for example increase the scale from 1 year to another year because the data looks promising. And also we have research site, again paid from levy, and this part is for growers. For example, last year we were looking on different timing of glyphosate application and how much it will impact germination, or work like here, like herbicide, where we look practically more than half of the trial is for growers, and every person would be able to get the access of the reports online about January, February to see the results. Of course, not all the data will be available, but that one which are here would be available for everyone. And we do the same for disease, the same for insecticides, and the same for biostimulants or seed treatment. This depending, because biostimulants is a so vast term that practically wherever you want to think as a biostimulant, you can put that. There is no regulation on the top of it, so it's a little bit murky water, I would say.
What have you seen so far? Anything surprising?
Yes, so this was, I would say, one of the most challenging year. It is the driest spring, I think, in 70 years. So the biggest challenge is drought, which as a consequence on heavier soil, there was a situation that establishment was not always perfect. So this is why it's so crucial to sign the contracts and establish the protocol and get the product as soon as possible, that we can prioritize drilling, not having a delay. So this is, I would say, the biggest learning curve. The other learning curve is we learn a lot when and how to irrigate the trials, because we this year irrigate certain trials. And the key thing is, if you see that the soil moisture drop below certain level, irrigate immediately after drilling, because if you wait when the soil is dry, you have to apply two or even three times more water to reach the seeds. So this is kind of the biggest conclusion we get from this year. If it's dry, you drill, irrigate. And if you cannot drill, just to look maybe and move to the farm site, which already established. Of course, it's not possible for seed treatment, so we plan to this next year put a seed treatment as one of the priority trials, which will go to the ground, just to avoid situation like that. I do not expect the drought like that next year, but I would not want to be surprised.
And what is PGRA trialing for the NCS project?
This is a big project, which involves a research part and also almost 200 farmers. Our trialing part of that project is we have block of winter wheat, intercrop of winter bean with winter wheat, winter bean, and a spring bean, and we looking on many different aspects. We have a sensors in the field. We observe how nitrogen, it's a continuous observation, so we observe how the nitrogen in soil change, how the level change, how the level of nitrogen change prior to drilling and after drilling, what are the consequences of leaving the straw on the field or collecting the straw. And the goal is to increase number of pulses in a rotation by 20%, what reduce substantially the amount of artificial nitrogen applied to crop, which save not only money, which is a big cost. Fertilizers are really expensive nowadays, but also it's reducing the CO2 emission. And we will have 3 years trial, we said this is the second year trial, and next year we want to increase a scale of the trial, adding a little bit more randomization. Because of that, that they are in blocks, it's not always difficult to run, it's not always easy to run a statistical analysis which would be significant, and this is what we want to improve. We would like to improve not only observation and a conclusion, but we want also that our conclusion will be strongly supported by statistic results which are statistically supported. It is early because actually we have results from 1 year, so it's rather 1 year I would call observation. So for example, the level of nitrogen in the soil was higher after bean than before the bean. So pre-drilling the level of nitrogen was lower pre-drilling than after drilling in the plots where we had the bean. Of course, in the plots with wheat, the nitrogen with application of fertilizer, the nitrogen level increased quite substantially. That what was interesting is in the plots which were harvested without leaving the straw in the field, the level of nitrogen in that part was higher than in the same part which was left with the straw, which is, I would say, I would not expect that. Also, we observed that the level of nitrogen start increasing about June in the plots with where bean was drilled. So bean definitely increase level of nitrogen which is in the soil post-drilling. And then again, for the next crop, you save on fertilizers. You can save up to, I don't remember the digit.
And finally, we spoke to Will Evans, who leads Pigeot Row's trial work with lentils and chickpeas.
Can you tell us a bit about the lentil trials that you're conducting and the results that you've seen so far?
So we've got two trials. Here we've got a variety trial. So I've kind of whittled down from the start of the project a few years ago from about 20 varieties and kind of chosen five of the best. So we've got different colours, like we've got black lentil, green lentil, poi lentil and a couple of reds. And then also another trial I'm doing at the other end of the field is an establishment trial. So we found establishment is really key in lentils. And so I've trialled different seed rates. I tried a biostimulant seed dressing and then rhizobia dressing as well.
Can lentils be produced commercially in the UK?
So yeah, they are. They are being produced commercially on a very small scale. So a couple of different companies over in Norfolk have quite multiple farms growing it commercially. And there's more and more interest in different legume break crops. And I think lentils are up there with one of the most viable.
What are lentils' ideal growing conditions?
They can be grown in pretty much all conditions, actually. They like all types of soil except probably the heaviest of clays. And they're drought resistant. They don't like too much rain, but they're not too sensitive to that. You know, they're grown in 5,000 metres up in Tibet and they're grown in Norfolk. So it shows you all the different climates they can grow in.
What are lentils' ideal growing conditions? What products, if any, can you use on them?
There's an emu for Stomp Aqua, which is pendimethalin. And then there's a couple of different fungicides, bacterial-based and fungicides for botrytis and sclerotinia. But yeah, we've never actually seen any disease or very minimal disease over the 5 years we've been doing it. And also, I haven't seen any pests at all. So yeah, they really don't need many inputs except the early weed control.
what kind of yields can growers expect?
So yeah, they're pretty consistently around 2 tonnes per hectare. The highest we've had for one of the varieties was 3.1 tonnes per hectare. So that's really good. And I think we could probably get most of them up to that level with some agronomy changes that we're slowly working out. But yeah, so around 2, 2.5 with upwards of 3 for like top yields, yeah.
What are the limitations of growing lentils?
So, as you can see from here, they're quite a small crop. So maybe a bit more complication with harvesting. I mean, we have a nice little trial combine and we've never had too much trouble. And they do it in Canada and India with combines. So there's obviously ways of doing it. So, and then I guess because they're an indeterminate crop, they just keep on producing pods. So timing of the harvest is quite key. And there is no desiccant at the moment. So that's maybe one of the kind of things that we need to maybe look at if it's in very large scale is some sort of form of desiccant.
What are the opportunities?
Opportunities. So I think, there's with most legume crops, they, you know, improve the soil, they add nitrogen to the soil, they improve the structure and everything like that. They're obviously very healthy and have high protein and fibre, which I think more and more people are interested in high protein, non-meat products.
Can you tell us a bit about the chickpea trials being conducted and what results you've seen so far?
So yeah, we haven't done as much work on chickpeas, mainly commercial trials, but people are very interested in looking at them. They're a bit less consistent than lentils yield-wise, so this year we've trialled two different drilling dates quite early, about middle of March, when normally we'd do it in April. And they're looking really good, actually, both of them. So we tried mid-March and end of March, and they both look really good. So, and that's about 5-6 different varieties. But yeah, very variety dependent. One of the varieties hasn't grown at all, and then a few others. But that could be down to seed quality as well. So I think that's really key with all of these is seed quality, definitely.
How feasible is growing chickpeas in the UK?
So I don't think there's any commercial growers. I think there is a very small area for Hodmadods in Norfolk. They grow, you know, and sell them as British chickpeas. So they sell them at a slight premium, but it's an incredibly small market at the moment. But who knows with how the climate's changing as it is, maybe chickpeas will become more viable in the UK.
What are their ideal growing conditions?
Yeah, they like it. They like it hot. They like it hotter than lentils. They don't like too much rain, kind of, at all, really. But they're not very sensitive enough that a little bit of rain will destroy the crop. You know, but as I said, the consistency of yield is more around your 1.5 tonnes per hectare. So not as much as lentils. It's been a good year, really, for chickpeas this year. Hopefully if it stays like this, but it all depends on harvest, because if there's rain at harvest, there's quite a few pod diseases that can come about. So yeah, at the moment they're looking really good, the best I've seen them. So yeah, hopefully maybe it will stay like this till harvest. We'll see, maybe it'll be the highest yielding year.
What products, if any, can you use on them?
There's no emus. I mean, yeah, we use similar to what we use on lentils, so Stomp Aqua, but there is no commercial emu for that. And fungus, I think similar. I think the only things that you can use are the bacterial fungicides that I mentioned earlier.
What are the limitations of growing chickpeas? What are the opportunities?
Yeah, so I think, again, the sensitivity to rain for chickpeas. Opportunities, they're really strong. When they do get going, they're nice. They're a lot taller than lentils. They're a lot more competitive weed-wise. So I think they're a bit easier to harvest and things like that. So there's pros and cons, yeah.
And that brings us to the end of today's extended episode of Inside the Pod. If you want to find out more about PGRO's trial work and everything that was on show at the Pulse Open Day, be sure to go to the PGRO website at pgro.org. You can also check out their socials on X and LinkedIn, as well as their YouTube channel, where various videos from the open day are available to watch. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whichever podcast provider you use. And thank you very much for listening to today's episode, and we'll see you in the next one.